What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum, as well as they've got mints. It's got caffeine, L-theanine, and vitamins B6 and 12. Helps with memory and focus. I like to chew it really all the time. Whenever I'm driving around, showing houses to my clients, anytime I'm making some phone calls, before a workout, anytime I feel like I need just a little bit of a mental boost, I'll pop a piece of NeuroGum and it gets me to where I need to be. So get out there and try some NeuroGum.
Also, shout out to our people over at Captain Beer Co. We got the perfect guest in our in studio today for this. But Captain Beer Co., they make great products for your beard. Beard balms, butters, oils, face wash, beard wash. They also make amazing smelling candles and body wash. And the great thing about it is it's made with all natural ingredients. So if you're looking for something to a great company to help support beard care and beard growth, check out Captain Beard Co. And if you use the promo code Zach and Pat, you will get 10% off your purchase.
All right. Now to introduce our, actually, before I introduce the guest, I would like to ask anybody that's been watching the show for any length of time, if you've been paying attention to us, if you've seen any of our clips and you've gotten anything out of it, we would love it if you could subscribe for us. You know, we're a newer podcast, lots of growing pains for sure here, and we're just kind of figuring it out as we go. So, you know, if you could do us a favor and hit that subscribe button, we'd really appreciate it. Now to introduce our awesome guest today. He's a friend of mine from high school. We're really going to get into a journey that he just went on. I'm not going to get into it right here. I'm going to let him tell you. The great and powerful Ryan DePriest.
Hi there. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, I'm so excited when he told me that we were getting you on and a little bit about your journey. We had another guest on talking about his journey and the things that he did, and really excited to hear about this.
Awesome. Yeah, it was a wild ride. I can't wait to tell you guys. Trying to wrap my head around it myself. So,
well, I guess what did you do, Ryan?
Let's do a brief overview and then we can
circle back and kind of, you can tell people a little bit about you.
So this summer, I started on May 1st. I hiked the entire length of the Appalachian Trail. It took me 156 days. It's just about 2,200 miles. It goes across 14 states from Georgia to Maine. It was a wild ride. I met a lot of really good people. I learned a lot about myself. I learned so much just about the outdoors and about the world in general. And it was really the most rewarding experience of my life. And I'm so glad I did it. And I maybe want to do it again one day. Who knows?
What was your why behind the trip?
A why? So my little brother, 2017, he did the whole trail. So me and him, we never really grew up outdoorsy or anything. He took like a outdoors class in college and kind of fell in love with camping. And he went and did the thru hike 2017 and finished. And unfortunately, he passed away in April of 2022. Sorry, thank you. And so that kind of inspired me to want to do that. So after his funeral that spring, I went with my dad to Amicalola Falls State Park. It's a park in Georgia where the trail begins. And we spread his ashes in the waterfall. And that's kind of where I first got the idea that maybe this would be something I want to do. Cause I was like, man, I really want to go to the end and, you know, get his ashes up to the top. So I'm like, initially I was like, dude, I'll fly there. You know, we'll climb a mountain, dump the ashes. It'd be really special, you know? And I'm like, man, that's not how he got there. You know, it doesn't really, it's like, it just felt like cheating. Felt like a shortcut, you know? It
didn't sit well.
Exactly. So then my next plan was kind of, let's do a little backpacking trip. Like, I don't know how to backpack or anything, but let's figure this out. And the final phase of the trail is called the 100-mile wilderness. It's in Maine. That's a 100-mile stretch going to the end of the trail that there's no road crossings. There's no anything. It's, you're on your own. You know, they tell you bring 10 days of supplies. There's no relief. So that was kind of my goal. So I started planning that a little bit. And I even, you know, requested some vacation time from work. I was looking into flights, looking up all the logistics. And before I went, I just canceled everything. I was like, dude, I think I'm going to regret not doing the whole thing. Like, it was just something in my mind, like, shortcut. I'm going to get there and I'm going to feel like I still took a shortcut. And like, that's not how he got there. He did the whole thing. So I canceled that. I was like, I don't know when I'm going to do this. Realistically, I had no idea when I was going to have 5-6 months available to do this. Right. So I'm like, hell, even if it's when I retire, you know, the ashes can sit on my dresser until then, you know, and it'll get done eventually. And here we are 2 years later and I made it happen. So
that's awesome.
You know, that's incredible.
It definitely skyrocketed my priority list pretty quick. I'm like, how do I make this happen? It was all I was thinking about all day. So I'm like, let's go do it or else I'll regret it.
Well, how do you prepare for something like this?
So my job, I was managing a retail store up in Wisconsin, and I didn't really plan on doing it until about February when we had our annual, like, kind of all company meeting. Some culture changes were happening that I wasn't exactly thrilled with. I'm like, it is February, like spring's about to come. And that's kind of the time you have to start the trail in order to get up north before winter. So I was like, okay, maybe I want to do this. I started looking more into it and, you know, I just finally pulled the trigger. So that added up well, timing wise, for me to want to do it. So I didn't really have a whole lot of training going into it. You know, I just kind of watched some YouTube, went on some day hikes, and I did do a couple overnight backpacking just to learn how the backpack and the tent and all that stuff operates. But as far as training wise, I really didn't do a whole lot. My initial plan for 2024 was to do a 70.3 Ironman. So I was like, I kind of spent the winter, you know, shedding some weight, getting my leg strength up. So that also just really worked out to where it all added up to ended up being successful.
Right? So you went in pretty much raw.
Yeah. I didn't really know what to expect.
That's awesome.
Dude, that's insane. Well, if we could, so how can we talk about your brother? How did he pass away, or what was kind of?
So happened? He committed suicide. That was in April, and yeah, it was a tough thing. And you know, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it wasn't an accident, right? It wasn't anything. And you know, as an older brother, you really start thinking.
How much older?
3 years. He was 3 years younger than me. So yeah, you really, as an older brother, you start thinking, you know, in what ways did I fail? What could I have done differently? What could I have, you know? And I struggled with that for, you know, quite a good amount of time.
Who wouldn't?
And, you know, and so I really wanted to just see, this was his favorite thing that he ever did. You know, I know he was so happy when he spoke about it. He was so happy when he was out here. He consistently, you know, made trips back to the eastern part of the country to, you know, he had friends all over the place, you know, so he was always coming back to it. So I really wanted to see like what he found in it and see if I could just connect with him in that way. And, you know, and definitely just get some things off my chest. I thought some solitude would be good. I thought just being in the place that he loved the best and being able to connect with it that way, you know, and just really forgive myself for, you know, some things that were maybe hanging over my head and be able to really get some closure. And I think I succeeded in that way.
Yeah, it sounds like a very spiritual journey. Yeah. Did you feel him, like feel his presence with you along the way?
Oh yeah. That's so awesome. So I was carrying his ashes. It was in a little Tylenol container, right, the whole time. And it was a little heavy. I had a lot. And you know, it's funny. So while you're hiking out there, you're really conscious of the weight of your backpack and all that stuff. So I kind of just started spreading his ashes in some special spots that had a special meaning to me. And I kind of felt him there. And I was like, you know, it also gets my pack a little lighter. Like he'd understand. Yeah. You know, and in the first part of the trail, you're hanging your food in the trees, you know, trying to avoid bears and whatnot. And it's like, sometimes you're in a campsite where you can't really find any rocks or anything. So it's like, well, the ashes work for that too, you know? So
yeah.
like he would understand.
Yeah.
So
well, that's awesome.
It was cool, man.
Well, you
go ahead.
I was going to say, let's dive into it. So you started in Georgia.
Started in Georgia. Yes. So that was May 1st.
May 1st. Yeah. Okay. And you no just, training.
And so you, and you quit your job to do this, right?
Yeah. So I put in my notice, first week of April. I gave him, you know, 3 weeks heads up. I done around, I think April 19th was my last day. Kind of moved, spent 10 days or so moving into a storage unit here in St. Louis. Stuff's still there. Got to organize that. Came back down, spent a week with my family, and then my mom and dad drove me down to Georgia to get going.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And you were doing, like, planning on just doing this solo?
Yeah. Yeah. So quite honestly, I mean, I would say 95% of the people out there are doing this solo. It's pretty hard to find a friend that has 5 months available.
Yeah.
So I mean, but there's a pretty good social network that we'll dive into that where like it's, yeah, you're doing it solo, but you're around people every day.
So it's not just complete isolation.
Yeah. So just to give a little roundup of the trail in itself, you know, it's 2,200 miles, goes Georgia, North Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, Maryland, or Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire. So, well, it's 2,200 miles. You know, each state has varying lengths and whatnot. The most time you spend is in Virginia, which is almost 600 miles. You know, you're dealing with a lot of varying weather, a lot of varying conditions, a lot of, you know, making gear changes based on what's going on with the terrain and all that. You know, a lot of it, I was just learning as I went, man.
Yeah, dude.
Learning on the fly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, before this, you said you'd done a couple, like, day trips. Like, you'd never done, like...
So, I'd done, let's see, I did two one-night overnights.
Okay.
So, hiking to a campsite, putting up my tent, hiking back to my car, you know. Okay. Like, yeah. And those would be 5 or 6 miles, you know, nothing really intense. But my very first one was down in Florida, and actually the entire time it was sideways rain downpour. Like, and that was my very first time doing it. I'm like, dude, like, that wasn't that bad. Like, I don't think it's going to get worse than that. Like, it's like, I made it work. Like, I'm here, like, everything's wet, but, like, the sun comes out today. Like, I can dry it out, you know? So I was like,
did it get worse than that?
Yeah. Yeah. But I was just like, dude, if I can handle that, like, what else? Like, let's go. Like, I still had fun. I still enjoyed it. And I was like, dude, it was just a different type of challenge, challenge I wasn't exactly even, like, ready for. I was like, okay, well, there's going to be a lot of varying things being thrown my way. And I was looking forward to the challenge of just kind of trying to conquer it.
That's insane. All right. So let's, you start in May, and like, what's that first day or two like? Are you?
So I would say it took me till about day two or three to really fully realize, hey, I'm going to be doing this for a while.
Like, and like, did you know it was going to take you as long as it did?
I did. Okay. So getting up north in Maine gets very cold in October. So the final terminus is in Baxter State Park. It's at the summit of Mount Katahdin in Baxter State Park. And that state park actually closes on October 15th. So it's like, I really, and that can vary a little bit depending on weather. So I really like didn't want to get to the end and have it close 2 days before I get there. And then,
and go that whole way and you can't just go like the last. Yeah.
And it's,
little bit.
And they say,
like, fuck it, I'm going to sneak
shit. Oh, yeah. This you figure it out. Yeah. But they say very clearly, like, hey, it's wilderness first, it's recreation second. Like, we don't care that you hike 2,000 miles. Try again in June. But again, you know, and it's just like, okay. So starting May, it was a short time period. This hike typically takes, I think, on average 6 months. I did it in 5 months, 3 days. But I did have to move a little bit, and I knew that starting in May, most people start mid to late March, maybe early April. So I kind of knew I had to be moving from the beginning. So that's where I really looked at it as a little bit more of an endurance challenge at the beginning instead of, you know, diving into the social scene, diving into, you know, I was just like, hey, well, I'm going to do this. I know most of my time is going to be by myself. Let me get efficient at it. Let me get good at, you know, figuring out how to get food, figuring out where I'm going to camp, figuring out all this stuff, how to get clean water, how to do all this stuff while I'm out here. Like, let me get good at this and really, really push myself. And that's really how I started. And I'd say the first half of the trail, it was pretty, pretty solo. I mean, there were a couple people that I spent some time with off and on, but for the most part, it was wake up, walk north, and just grind out miles. And let's try and get ahead of the game. Cause I didn't want to get up north, where actually once you hit Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, the terrain, that's the hardest and slowest terrain of the trail. So I didn't want to get up there trying to rush to get to that end goal. So I was like, okay, let me be ahead of schedule by the time I'm halfway through, maybe ahead of schedule to where the second half, you know, if I want to dive more into social scene and taking my time and, you know, hiking 3 miles to a lake and sitting there for 24 hours, like I wanted to be able to do that. So the first half I grinded it out and it was fun, dude. I learned so much about just camping and backpacking and what works for me. And, you know, just talking to other people too, you've got so many people out there that you can ask for advice and, you know, you're constantly talking about gear and, you know, what works for you, what could work for me. So you learn a lot real quick.
Well, speaking of, so what did it entail gear wise? Like, obviously you're trying to keep it as light as possible, but still have enough with you to manage that.
For sure.
That manage that distance.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you're not bringing food with you. You've got your tent, you've got some clothing, dry clothing to keep with you. But yeah, so explain to us kind of what your pack looked like.
So yeah, weight is everything. And that was something I learned quickly because going into it, I did not really take into effect how much weight I was carrying at the beginning. So I was actually carrying a rock climbing backpack at the beginning, which is 6 pounds empty. And it took me about 50 miles for me to get to a gear store and buy a new backpack that was 2 pounds empty, you know, and those 4 pounds, like, that's huge. That's right. Quick weight that you can get rid of very quickly. And then, yeah, so your essentials are pretty much the sleeping items. You know, you got your sleeping bag, your sleeping pad. You know, I had a pillow. That was kind of a luxury. A lot of people don't use pillows and they'll just use a rolled up jacket or rain jacket or whatever as a pillow. I'm like, I need some quality sleep here. I'll bring a little pillow. Yeah. And then, yeah, food system. Like, I carried a stove the entire time, just to boil water. honestly, during the summer, I really didn't need it. I just have a coffee addiction that I couldn't really surpass. So I kept carrying my stove for the entire time. Yeah. And then obviously you got your tent, my base weight. So base weight is, before food and water.
Okay.
Cause those are going to vary depending on, you know, how long you're hiking that day or whatever. So my base weight was about low 20s, 20 pounds to 22 pounds. And then, you know, you're typically carrying about 3 pounds of food per day until your next resupply stop, which you resupply pretty much every 3 to 4 days. I'd say you come to a road crossing where hopefully there's a grocery store walkable, or you stick your thumb out and Good Samaritan drives by and takes you to the grocery store and you can buy another 3 days worth of protein bars. Oh,
okay. So is that what you were living on? Like what was your food?
Yeah. So, I mean, you get a little like rice sides that you can boil water and cook real quick. A lot of protein bars, a lot of tortillas, peanut butter for protein. Yeah, just oatmeal for breakfast a lot. It's extremely repetitive. I would say that would by far my least favorite part of this entire thing was the food and the nutrition. Cause I'm really not a junk food guy, but when you need calories, like, I mean, I'm guessing I'm probably burning 5,000 to 6,000 calories a day.
For sure.
And there's no way to consume that enough because you got to carry everything. So it's like a lot of junk food. It's, you know, a family size pack of Oreos is a lunch break, you know. It's like you're just doing whatever you can to try and get some energy going. And you can really feel depleted pretty quick when you're not doing that. So yeah, just anything you can get in you, you know, just as many calories as you can.
Now, I was gonna go ahead. A couple, like, do people go out there and like bring their like a bow and arrow or like hunt or like fish, or is that an option?
So a lot of my friends asked me that, and I did tell them I was hunting. I wasn't hunting. No one's hunting out there.
I was like, is that something that you could do to help
fashion a spear?
Like, well, one, yeah, like help conserve or at least help speed up the time. I guess you wouldn't speed up time because you're trying to hunt something, but like if you're trapping and things like that, is that something that you guys, that people do out there, or is it really just waiting and packing and carrying food with you?
So not so much the hunting. There's so many hunting regulations and all that you really, and then you're carrying a bow or whatever.
Yeah, right.
It's really not going to help anything. I would say that some people did have a little miniature fishing pole that they would be able to catch a trout or whatever and, you know, cook it over fire, which was pretty badass. I tried to do it one day. I spent 8 hours trying to catch a fish, couldn't catch a fish. I fucking gave away my pole. Like, whatever. Like, I'm done with that. It was a cool idea. But watching people do that, I was like, damn, it's like, that's badass, man. Like, I want to be like you.
It's legit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, dude, let me start cooking over fire a little more. So I did cook over fire a little bit, mainly hot dogs, bratwurst, you know, just heating things up that, you know, maybe wouldn't have had an opportunity to otherwise, you know, even just putting a hot pocket over the fire is like,
yeah.
Nice. Makes you feel like you're out there, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Get that smoky flavor.
Yeah. That smoky breakfast burrito.
Yeah. So wait, what did you do for water?
So pretty often you're coming across creeks.
Okay.
And you have filling up. You have a filtration system.
Okay.
So water coming in at 2.2 pounds per liter is one of the heaviest things you're going to carry. So you really kind of map out when the next water crossing is going to be and pretty much try and do it. Carry as minimal as much as you can, you know? So we call it cameling up. Pretty much you're sitting at the water source drinking until you hurt so that you potentially don't have to carry as much to the next water source. You know, there's an app out there. It's called Far Out. So they kind of give you guides per state on where water sources are, and people can leave comments on what the flow rate is and whether or not the water's looking good. Maybe it's a weird color or whatever, you know, they're just kind of telling you how much water to expect, you know, cause it can potentially be dangerous if you're not finding water in the right amount of time. So yeah, just coming across water crossings. If you need water, drink as much as you can, carry what you need to the next water source. Hopefully there's a water source in your camp that you can actually boil some water, cook some food, cook some breakfast the next morning. So you usually try and camp by a water source. Worst case scenario, you can carry 3 or 4 liters up to your campsite. So while I was going through Virginia, about 600 miles, it literally didn't rain the entire time I was there. So about 35 days, no rain, and a lot of the creeks dried up. So, yeah, a lot of 15-mile water carries where you're carrying 3-4 liters. It's adding 10 pounds to your backpack.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just doing whatever you can. And so many Good Samaritans. The one thing I really want to press on is how good the people in these communities are, because they're so ingrained into the Appalachian Trail culture that, like, they're aware of that. They know that. And then you'll get to a road crossing, and there's 25 gallons of water sitting there waiting for you.
Oh,
In gallon jugs, you know, and you fill up as much as you can. And they're like, hey, leave a comment on the app. You know, if it starts running low, I'll bring more. So it's just like, and without their help, like, you can't do it unless you're carrying 10 liters or something crazy, you know. But for the most part, just people were on it, people in these communities that really care about the trail, care about the hikers.
That's really cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to get into some of the people you meet. Like, what's that? How does that happen? How do you just like, you're just walking and they're walking like, hey, what's up, man? Like, or what? Like, how does that come about? Yeah.
So, I mean, 90% of the time you're hiking by yourself. You know, people walk at different paces, take different breaks, take different lunch breaks, whatever. When you really get the sense of community and stuff is at the campsites. So the AT actually has a pretty good...
What's AT? Appalachian Trail. Yeah. Okay, got it. Sorry.
So they have a pretty good infrastructure as far as shelters. So every, I'd say, 8 to 15 miles or so, there's just a three-walled shelter that can allow you to escape weather, or a lot of times people just sleep in them, and there's usually some campsites right around there and a fire pit and stuff. So most people will sleep at those. There's usually a water source nearby as well, and that's usually where, like, the community sense comes in, where, you know, you're getting to camp at 5 p.m., you're cooking dinner, making a fire, putting up tents, and just talking trash with people
where
around
you. Where are you guys from? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And just kind of learning about their story, and, you know, hopefully you dive deep and you're not talking about gear too much. That talk can get old. A lot of times people will just be talking about the same stuff. You know, it's like, hey, man, can we get maybe talk about a little philosophy or something? You know, you know, what's going on? Let's talk about something different.
Football guy or what?
Yeah, that's really where you, that's where you make friends. That's where you just learn. And those are usually the people that you're going to be like leapfrogging with, you know, throughout the trail. If you're walking roughly the same pace, it's like, you're going to see these people so many times. Sometimes you see them every day. Sometimes you don't see them for a month. And then you see them, you know, 1500 miles up. I had some people that I hadn't seen since my first week that I saw again in Maine.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it's just like, dude, how
you made it?
How was the trip? Yeah. I was hoping you were still alive. Yeah. But yeah, it always surprised me, like,
your
how
beard
many
looks
people,
great.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Like, oh, you smell good. Yeah, but it always surprised me, like, how many brand new people that I would meet in like New Hampshire or Maine. It's like, when'd you start? He's like, May 3rd. I'm like, you've been hiking north this whole time? Like, yeah. Like, man. Like, well, how have I never met you? Like, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't know. But you meet them for the first time, you know, and you're 2,000 miles into this hike. It's like, wow, it's incredible. It's
right.
Like,
how do we not cross paths?
Exactly. You know, maybe I'm an early riser, you're not, and I'm keep walking past your campsite while you're still asleep. And then, you know, I'm in town getting groceries when you leapfrog me again. And it just works out that, like, you never meet people. And then there's some people that, man, I want to get away from you. and I can't do it somehow.
Yeah. Well, leave me the fuck alone. He doesn't shut up.
Exactly. Like, man, I couldn't get rid of you if I tried.
So what was a typical schedule like for you on a day? Like, did you have like a set time that you were waking up and getting going? Like, how many miles that you were going per day? Or was it just each day was different?
Each day definitely different. You definitely find your routines that you like, that you feel work better. You know, so during the heat of the summer, man, when it's just terribly humid, it's hot, you got long days, man, I really developed the routine of I'd be hiking by 4, kind of hike till about 10 a.m take a break until
hike,
about
start hiking by 4
or damn. Yeah, probably hike from 4 to 10 or so, take a long break during the afternoon, take a nap, and then start hiking again like 4 or 5 p.m hike till 9 or 10 p.m you know, put up your tent and stuff. And that was just the only way, like, to do miles, you know, to for me to finish, especially early on. It's like I had to be doing 15 miles a day. Like, you don't really, if you take a day off, it's like, well, you got to make that up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so I would just find ways. And I've always been an early riser. I've never really minded. And, you know, it's, and honestly, you're not sleeping that well in your tent. So it's like, you're usually cracking your eyes open around 2 or 3 or sometime to take a piss or whatever. And it's just like, sometimes it's just like, okay, I guess let's go ahead. Let's just go ahead, man.
We're up already.
Let's get going, you know? And honestly, even the darkness, like, it didn't really help with the humidity that much. Like, it's humid as hell at 3 a.m. just like it is at noon. But at least, like, the sun's not beating down on you. So you just come up with these different routines and you figure out what works for you. The one thing I would say is that, like, on days where you do sleep in and you're not hiking till 10 or 11, you're just constantly feeling like you're behind to where, like, the morning was the most valuable time to make up time, you know? Because, like, hell, if you're not starting at 11 and then it's 2 o'clock and you're taking lunch and you've only, but if it's like 11 or whatever and just get started and it's 2 o'clock, you're taking lunch and you've only done 4 miles and it's like, dude, like, how am I, like, I'm tired, you know? It's just like, so just getting up, getting after it right there in the morning. And hell, if you've done 12, 15 miles by lunchtime, it's like, dude, you can do whatever you want today. Now you get to have fun. You know, now you actually get some downtime. Now you actually get to,
you can actually relax.
Exactly.
You know, without feeling anxiety. Like, fuck, I got to make that up.
Exactly.
And, you know,
exactly.
Over the next 3 days, I got to add that extra 5 miles a day to make up for that 15 that
so
I lost.
So now all of a sudden you're trying to do 20s. You're hiking all day. And it's just like, well, as your legs get stronger, 20 miles becomes not as big of a deal, but it's still time consuming. It's like you're walking the entire day. You're not sitting there at a viewpoint for an hour, you know, having lunch and enjoying yourself. Now you're not that you don't enjoy yourself while you're actually hiking, but that gets extremely monotonous. It's like you end up having more fun when you're not walking, and walking's just kind of what you have to do, you know? So
now, like technology wise, I mean, do you have like a watch or your phone or something tracking all of like your steps and your movements and your sleep and things like that to help you get through things like that? Or was it just kind of,
I use my Garmin watch to kind of keep track of my mileage, and you know, I'm always been kind of a stats guy. So I like seeing what my elevation gain is for the day and what my average pace is and all that kind of thing. And then you got your battery bank. So that usually gets you 3 or 4 charges of your cell phone just to be able to check the app where the water sources are. For the most part, you don't really have much service. When the East Coast is so populated that you're pretty close to towns most of the time. So sometimes you can get a few bars and be able to, you know, check on things that you need and Google where the restaurants are in the town and stuff, you know, just to kind of prepare ahead. But for the most part, you're kind of just out there, and you know, electronics wise, you want your battery bank because you don't want to be in danger if you know you have no power at all. But for the most part,
you need to call for help.
Yeah, the watch was handy. It was fun to keep stats. I wouldn't say it was essential.
Now, did you take any video equipment or anything like that, or was it just your phone? And
it was just my phone, iPhone pictures, man. Just taking pictures every day when I see a cool mushroom or whatever, you know. Just staring at trees, like, whoa, that's tall, you know. Yeah. Some people had some serious camera equipment, GoPros, that type of thing. So many people are out there, you know, making YouTube documentaries. Yeah. And I was actually, I love photography. I love taking nature photos. I mean, I was really considering getting a nice camera and bringing it out, and I'm so thankful that I did not. Like, it's weight and
it's a liability. It's like, man, you drop this thing, you're like, fuck, I just dropped a $1,500 camera.
And being out there in the woods, like, that's not the time to learn either. I'm just like, it's just like, dude, you got so many things going on. I had so many things to learn. Photography doesn't need to be one of them.
Right. You know? Especially going in with like very little training and know-how.
Yeah.
And so like logistically, like, did you have like, I guess it might be a dumb question, but is there like only just like one way to go?
You go north or you can go south.
Trails. No, I mean, like is there like,
through it? Gotcha. So there are, so the AT is covered with white blazes, right? So there's a little white blaze on the on a tree or on a rock or whatever, just kind of showing you that you're still going the right direction. Because especially when you're in like a national park or a state forest or whatever, there might be some side trails that intersect it and they just don't want you going the wrong way. So you got these white blazes. So any side trail will usually have a blue blaze. You call it blue blazing. If you're taking like a shortcut around, like, which people do, you know, I wanted to hike the AT, you know, so for the most part I stayed on the AT, you know, but there are options to kind of go around a mountain.
Kind of like going skiing. You got your black and blue and that white diamond.
Yeah,
stuff.
You can kind of take shortcuts and stuff. Like, I mean, I spent 99% of my time easily on the AT, but there are some alternate routes where some of them are actually cooler. You know, like I wasn't afraid to go take one. You know, if this one leads to a waterfall and you get to walk around along a nice flowing river for 10 miles instead of going up a mountain and back down to a summit that doesn't have a view, it's like, well, that sounds more fun.
Yeah.
Like, I have no problem doing that. You know, I wasn't committed that every step needs to be the AT. You know, most of it was the AT, but if you can make a good case why a different side trail is more fun to get north, like
with the listen. Side trail, like have like a description of like what is ahead.
Yeah, it's all kind of on the app. You download the map as well, so you can kind of see the maps of the trails. You're like, hey, if we go left here, it'll actually intersect with the AT again in 12 miles, and like that wall that way has 3 waterfalls and a bunch of water. This way has a mountain to no view. And then you just walk back down. It's like, well, that sounds better.
Definitely. The water. And
like that sounds better.
The water, waterfalls. Like, yeah, that sounds
better. Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah. Climbing a mountain.
Exactly. Yeah. Some people, they call it purism, where it's like, oh, every step wasn't on the AT or whatever. It's
sure.
Like,
yeah, fuck those guys.
Dude, I'm connecting my footpath to Georgia to Maine. That was what was important to me.
For sure.
You know, some people do get lazy and maybe like, get a ride up north. And it's like,
well, and I mean, you're doing it for you're doing it for your brother. Who knows what, you know, did he veer off at one point, you know.
Do you know what he took? Did he talk to you about like the past that he took or anything?
Not really.
Like deviations that he might have done?
I wish I like understood the AT more when he was explaining it to me, because a lot of it was as cool as I thought it was. I didn't really ever at that point picture myself doing it. So like paying attention to the little details really wasn't a top priority. I'm like, dude, that's awesome that he did it. That's incredible. I'm so amazed. But like, I wasn't there. Like, it's hard to know, like, hey, you loved this little small town in Virginia. It's hard to really care, you know? And I wish I would have paid way more attention when he was talking about it, you know, because I would love to, you know, compare notes to, you know, what his experience was like compared to mine. but you know, I didn't really get that opportunity. And, you know, I do know a couple things about what he did and some places that he took pictures at that I recognized and was there. So that was important to me, you know, but as far as the extreme details of his trip, I'm really not sure. I wish I knew more.
Speaking of notes, did you keep a journal or?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. So glad I did it. It was definitely a luxury item. You know, I kept a handwritten journal, where all 156 days I have an entry. Just kind of how many miles did I do? Where did I camp? I wanted to kind of keep track of where my progress was on that day. Where did I camp? And then just kind of some details of who I hung out with, what I did, just something that,
from Kentucky or whatever.
Something that would spark a memory, you know, just like, hey, oh, I remember that day. That day sucked. Or I remember that day. That was one of my favorites, you know? Sure. So it's just like something that would spark a memory.
Well, speaking of, was there one that sticks out more than another, like your favorite memory or part of the trip?
So yeah, they're all so different. I'll say one day that really stands out. It's in New Hampshire. It's in the White Mountain National Forest in New Hampshire. Most beautiful area of, I didn't even know it existed before I started hiking, like in it. And it's incredible. So it's called the Presidential Traverse. So you summit, I don't know, 4,000 foot mountains. So New Hampshire has 48 4,000 footers. So in one day you're doing, it's a 12-mile alpine zone. No tree line. You're doing, I think, 8 4,000 footers in that one day, including Mount Washington, which is the highest mountain in the Northeast, home of the most dangerous weather in America. Recorded 231 mile per hour wind speeds. That's the highest highest wind ever recorded on Earth was up there.
Now, how does height wise? How does that compare to like the Rocky Mountains?
So the Rockies are commonly at 14,000 feet. Okay. Mount Washington is 6,200. With the other ones, you know, hitting 5,000 or 4,000, but it also depends where you're starting, right? So a lot of these mountains that you're climbing in Colorado, you're starting at 11,000 feet to get to 14,
right?
You know, and Denver itself is at 5,300 or whatever. So it's like, yeah, I'm climbing up to 5,300, the height of Denver, but I actually climbed 4,500 feet to get there.
From sea level.
Yeah. So you're not dealing with the altitude sickness or anything like that. But I mean, actual incline, like you're doing the same exact thing, you know? So anyway, that day, you know, I climbed 8 of them, all in Alpine Zone. The weather was just absolutely perfect. We were taking our time. You know, I was hiking with a group of people at that point. Like, we're just taking our time sitting on these summits, just absolutely hanging out. So we watched sunset on the second to last mountain. It was called Mount Adams. Watched sunset there, and there was a little hut at the bottom. So they have little rescue huts, you know, in case weather strikes or whatever, you need somewhere to hide, right? So we're watching sunset up there. We hike down in the dark. We're like, hey, the hut, like there wasn't bad weather, and they actually charge $150 a night for like touring guests, you know, but they will let through hikers go there if it's an emergency. They're like, this isn't an emergency. It's beautiful. You did this yourself. Go hike to where you need to hike or camp or whatever. So we actually climbed the next one. It was Mount Madison in the dark, scaling a wall. It was a lot of upper body.
I was going to say, what's that terrain like?
It's brutal. New Hampshire is absolutely brutal. It was all day. It takes you 10 miles and it's a full day of hiking. You're absolutely exhausted. I had no idea how much upper body exhausted by the time I was done with New Hampshire and Maine. Like it was,
I was like, is there a fear of,
so like, you're like bear crawling up these mountains?
Or? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Pretty much. It's pretty steep. I mean, there was one mountain. It's the Wildcat Mountain in New Hampshire. I want to say you climb 2,000 feet in a mile.
Oh,
like it takes you 2.5 hours, and it's just like, dude, it's, and you can't slip. Like it's like,
yeah,
like if you slip, it's bad news and you're in the middle of nowhere. So yeah, it's just a lot of that. And anyway, so we climb Mount Madison, we're scaling this thing. We get to the top and it's like, it's a beautiful, you can see, kind of see the Milky Way. You get all these stars out there. And we just sat there for a half an hour, like just staring up, just like talking about the Big Dipper. One of my buddies knew where the Little Dipper was. I'm like, oh, teach us astronomy, dude. Like it's so cool. It makes you just reflect on, like, you know, back in the old days before light pollution stuff, these people are just seeing this stuff every single day. It's like, how could you not just study it nonstop? It's like, dude, it's, you can get obsessive about it. It's incredible. And so, yeah, we hung out there and finally just a long descent down to tree line. Finally ended up getting to camp around 11 or 12 PM, but it really was the most incredible day that I've had out there. I mean, there's a laundry list of other ones, but that stands out, dude. Just the 12-mile alpine zone where you're just have 360 degree views for the entire day. Awesome. Like it was something.
It's pretty cool.
All right. Yeah. So what was the shittiest day our shittiest part.
Oh man, where do I start with that laundry list too?
Yeah, let's get into that. Because I know there were some days that were fucking brutal.
Day four, my first lightning storm, man. That one I was at least safely in a tent. So that one, like, machine gun bullets were hitting my tent with rain, dude. Like, it was so loud. I'm holding my tent down. I'm like, dude, I don't really know if I staked this thing down very well. Yeah. Like, I was in my sleeping clothes. Like, I put on all my hiking clothes. I put on my hiking boots. Like, I put on everything. Like, I was ready for this tent to blow down the mountain. I'm like, hey, if that happens, what's my game plan? Like, let's be ready if this thing doesn't stay. And so I just put on all my clothes, packed my bag. I'm just sitting there in my tent while my world's lighting up with lightning. I'm just like, okay, well, if it goes, like, I got to walk backwards 2 miles. I think there's a shelter back there, and I'm going to run. Just find a way to get your tent in your bag. Just who cares? You don't need to fold it up. Just stuff it in there and run 2 miles backwards. You know, so that was that day. That was like day four. That really reminded me that Mother Nature was playing this game too. I'm like, hey, don't take anything.
Fuck around.
Yeah, don't take anything for granted. Another wild lightning experience. I'm camped out at the top of a summit. And we kind of see this. I'm with two other guys, and we kind of see like the thunderstorm kind of rolling in. It's like just after sunset. We're like, that's not coming near us, right? So we all kind of get in our tents. All of a sudden, we're kind of hearing it, so we're all hopping out of the tents. Like, you don't want to be up in an alpine zone really at all, like, especially during, not rain, but especially not lightning. So it's like, okay, so we're looking at the storm kind of rolling in. It's getting closer and closer. Like, I was definitely in my head thinking, like, we should leave. Yeah. Like, and then finally, one guy, like, hey, I think I'm packing up. And then the other two of us were like, yep, me too, me too, me too. So tent in the pack as fast as you can, you know, like, I put my tent away, and then I helped the other guy. I'm like, hey, man, it's go time. It's go time because it's coming. And then by the time tents were in the bag, we ran about 2 miles to tree line, lightning all around us, just pouring down rain. It was the most adrenaline I think I've ever had in my life, like thinking it was all ending right there. And just sprinting down there. I gave one of my buddies an edible for the first time. That was not the right night to do that. So he's like, run, motherfucker, run, run. Cause I was like speed walking at first. Like I wasn't high. Yeah. You know? And he was scared shitless. He's one of those guys that was somewhere in Tennessee. I'd say I didn't see him again till literally Maine. We were about 100 miles to the end.
Did you take another edible today?
And he was telling me that story. I'm like, dude, I forgot I gave you an edible. He's like, yeah, I haven't done one since, motherfucker.
Yeah. Now's the perfect time.
Shout out my boy Poop Spoon.
Poop Spoon?
Poop Spoon.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
But yeah, lightning, definitely don't want to fuck around with that. Other hard days, I mean, the heat was freaking brutal, dude. The heat was absolutely exhausting when we didn't have water for most of Virginia, and just dealing with the heat, man. I had some serious dehydration, I think, going on at some points where I was taking a break every 100 steps. Like, I just could not get over this mountain. I'm like, I'm kind of running out of water. Like, there's no water until I get down this mountain. Like, it's at the summits, there's not water sources, you know? So yeah, just kind of dealing with all that stuff and just trying to make the best decisions that you can, you know? And now you don't really know, like, every situation's so different that, like, it's just kind of assess what's going on and control what you can control, and, you know, everything will probably be okay. Yeah. You'll figure it out.
Well, one of the things that we like to talk about on the show is mentality that it takes to do certain things. Mm-hmm. Like, what's your mentality like? Or what would you say is the biggest lesson you learned mentally? And then, like what's going through your mind each and every day as you're going on this journey?
So yeah, mentality is huge. I mean, I definitely had the motivation of, you know, mm-hmm. going on my journey and getting my brother's ashes up there to where, you know, I was never going to quit. You know, quitting was not an option. I was kind of going into it like, hey, I hope this is fun, but this is probably going to suck, you know, and just kind of
a good mentality to have.
Yeah. Any bit of fun that I had was kind of a plus. It was a bonus, you know? And, I think that's where a lot of people kind of failed, where they were thinking this was going to be fun, but it might suck. You know, and kind of having that. So I learned to get comfortable with the uncomfortable very quickly. You know, like at the beginning, you know, you have these hard days where it won't stop raining. Everything you have is wet, and you're just thinking, man, this is terrible. But it's like, dude, the next day is usually pretty good. You know, the sun comes out, it's 70 degrees, and you got a lake that you can go soak your feet in and just hang out and have some good food and, you know, and just hang out with good people. And, you know, just kind of realizing that there was a good day right around the corner. You know, maybe it wasn't tomorrow, maybe it wasn't the next day, but there's going to be another good day around the corner. So it really stops you from getting too hung up about how miserable you are in the moment. Like, just knowing that it's temporary, you know. And, you know, so I was hiking with this guy, his name was John. And in the Smoky Mountains, he quit. So the Smoky Mountains is about 200 miles in. You go through the Smoky Mountain National Park for 80 miles or so. And like, I was hiking with him for a couple of days, and we got to, and it was just downpouring. It was the most miserable stretch I've had. It was probably 5 straight days of rain. And I had just sent home my heavy sleeping bag because it was so hot before then. I'm like, oh, I don't need this. Let's save some weight and I'll have a lighter little.
You say you sent it home, like you went into town and like mailed it home?
Yeah, okay. Mailed it at the post office. I'm like, I don't want to throw it away, obviously. Sure, it's like, I'm going to need it up in the north. But yeah, so it's like, I was so, like, it was literally like, okay, I got 7 miles. Freezing rain, like, I gotta get there. There's another shelter. Let's do it as fast as we can. Just close your eyes and go, you know. And you know, and he was doing some of that stuff with me, and we were kind of having fun with it, you know. And then we're at one of the shelters towards the end of the Smoky Mountains. He's like, I think I'm done. And I go, yeah, it's 3 o'clock. I could be done too, you know. Yeah. You know, I could be done for the day. I'm pretty cold, and we're in a shelter, and I'm warm right now, so it's like, I don't need to hike anymore. Let's call it a day. He's like, no, like, done. Like, I think my wife's gonna come pick me up. I'm like, what the hell? Seriously?
Yeah.
And it's just like, and that's where I kind of realized to just be more compassionate towards some of the other hikers. Like, cause I would have never guessed that he was on the brink of leaving or anything while we're talking. And he's like, and that night he called his wife and she drove from Cincinnati to the Smoky Mountains to come pick him up. And I'm like, all right, see you, dude. Like, I'm just like, man, maybe I could have like just been more supportive of him or be more concerned about what his outlook was, what his mentality was, and just. So that kind of opened my eyes, like, hey, man, everyone out here might not be doing as well as I am. Like, just because I kind of get off on, you know, hiking being through miserable. The rain yeah. and being miserable and kind of embracing the suck. Like, I wanted it to rain. Sometimes I was like, I dare you to rain again, motherfucker. Yeah. Like, you won't do it. Like, but it's like, that just really opened my eyes to, like, just showing compassion towards other people and that, like, everyone's not in the same mindset. And
so did that, you know, shift some of the conversations you were having with people from then on?
Yeah, for sure. I think I really tried, you know. I tried to avoid those surface level conversations that a lot of people were having at the tent sites and all that, where we're talking gear and talking water sources and whatnot, and just trying to dive in a little bit, like, hey man, how's your hike going? Like, look them in the eyes. Like, how are you doing? You know, like, cause this is freaking hard. Yeah. Like, I have days where I'm struggling. It changes hour to hour where it's just like, man, this sucks. And man, I'm having
feet
fun.
Feet fucking hurt.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything's in pain, yeah,
what the
dude.
Fuck did those blisters?
Oh, we'll God. Get into that. Yeah. But it's like, dude, and it definitely changed the conversation I was having. And that's where I kind of just started having way more genuine connections with people and just like really getting to know people. And that's really, I'd say, when I started really making some friends and just like having relationships that I thought were worthwhile and that I hope are long term, you know, just by kind of diving in deep and getting to know people and getting to know where they're in this process.
Oh yeah. You do tough shit with tough people. You're going to connect on that stuff.
Oh, for sure.
For sure. Yeah. 100%.
And some of them help me, you know. It's like, dude, I'm here like, hey dude, my foot is fucked. Like, I do not want to walk today. It's like, hey, like, and they just give you support. It's like, no, they can't fix that.
Yeah,
like,
they're
they
not
going to
carry
anything.
You.
Exactly.
You
know? There's not much they can do, but just like, just knowing that they're there and that they're going through some of the same things.
It's match your pace. So you got someone to talk to.
Exactly.
You know, whatever.
Exactly,
it is.
Dude. And, you know? And there's so many just people out there trying to help each other. I was absolutely blown away by the community out there. It was really rewarding.
How many, I'm sure it's probably hard to track, but you say it was a couple hundred different people that you came across?
So
10, 20, 30 different
so,
people?
So through hiking, the Appalachian Trail Conservancy actually does kind of keep track of how many people attempt this. It's usually about 3,000 to 4,000 people try and do this each year. Okay. Roughly a 20% success rate. So, you know, I think three.
That's fucking awesome, man.
So I started pretty late. I was the 2,600th person to start, roughly. They give you a little number at the beginning at the state park. And so there's probably about 3,000 this year. So assuming, you know, 700 succeeded, roughly, that's right. So you're probably meeting, I don't know, a few hundred. I'd say 200 or 300. I mean, some of them longer than others. There's people I saw every other day what fell for thousands of miles and people I just met in Maine. So, you know, there's a lot of people. And but
other than Poop Spoon, was there anybody else? Anybody else that you really connected with?
So like the first half, like I was really in the endurance mode where I didn't, like, I would camp with people, but we never had long term where we'd camp 10 nights in a row together or anything like that. You know, we were kind of all just doing our own thing and I'd meet them and we'd leapfrog and all that. Once I got to the north, I would say New York and New Jersey, I hung out with my friend Lizard. She Yeah.
What was your name? Mine was Squeaky.
Everybody's got a name.
Mine was Squeaky. Yeah, they're called trail names. So you just kind of get one usually in the first part of the trail, just something, a funny thing that you did. Mine was, so after that Smoky Mountain experience, my shoes squeaked on every footstep. Like, it was so annoying. Like, I was just like, dude, it was hundreds of miles that every single footstep, my shoes would squeak. Just like, and people could hear me coming. I'm like, hey, dude, I'm going to let you go a little ahead so I don't have to hear that. I'm like, okay, sweet.
Thanks.
I'll be listening to it all day again. But I wasn't ready to buy new shoes yet. So I was like, okay, let me do a couple more 100 miles.
Did you have to buy some new shoes?
Oh, yeah. I went through four and a half pairs, which is crazy. You know, it's 5 months, but you're going through a pair.
And then they're going through fucking all the weather and all the water and the rain and the mud.
4 days later. Your brand new shoes look like they've been through hell. Yeah. It's just like, okay, at least there's still some cushion on them. But
yeah,
as far as the outdoor,
but I bet the first day or two, you're probably rubbing, getting some blisters. And
it's all just adjustment. But so anyway, in New York, New Jersey, I was hanging out with my friend Lizard. She, good drinking buddy. You know, New York had so many like delis and bars just kind of right down the street. Like New York was an absolute joy to hike. I mean, you get to a road crossing, it's like, hey man, there's pizza a quarter mile down the road. Like,
let's go.
I'll have lunch there and I'll pack out dinner and lunch tomorrow. Like, give me another 14 inch pizza. I'll shove it in my backpack. It'll be the first thing I eat.
Fold that and put it in a gallon bag.
Exactly. So me and her had some good times, just good drinking buddies and, you know, playing darts, playing pool, that kind of thing, whenever you get the opportunity. And then the last part of the trail I spent with three people I call really good friends now, Miss Frizzle, Cheeto and Boojum. Shout out to you guys. I know I'll send this link over and you guys will listen to this. So I spent I met them probably beginning, or actually day one was that presidential traverse in New Hampshire where we did that big day. And that was all of one of our favorite days, you know, and I think that's kind of how we really kind of sparked us hiking the rest of the trail together. But yeah, we hiked New Hampshire, Maine, really every night. I think we pretty much camped out together and, you know, that was the last 400 miles. So I'd say the last month I spent with them. And that was so much fun, dude. You like when you're spending every second together, like you're kind of hiking alone, but you see them every night and you make plans and, you know, you're just having bonfires. And at that point we weren't worried about time. Like at that point I was like, hey, like we're going to make it. Like I got to do 10 miles a day or whatever to get to the end. So it's like, we can hang out actually and just hike 8 miles today. No big deal. I'll meet you at this lake and start a fire and, you know, just hang out, you know? Sure. So, and Maine and New Hampshire are the two most beautiful states in my opinion. So it's like, we constantly were just, it was, wake up, crack some jokes while we're putting away our tents about how we probably don't want to hike that day. And then, you know, go find a lake, have lunch, go find another lake, set up camp. It's 3 p.m., make a bonfire, eat some food, joke around, smoke some weed, like just chill. And it was so much fun. We did that for 25 days in a row. It's just like, it's awesome. It's like cloud nine, man. And that's where I was like, dude, this is so much fun. And like part of me thinks I would have had a better time if I did that kind of thing earlier on too. But I loved the endurance aspect too, to where it's like, when I really think back on it, I don't think I would have changed anything. It's like, I wanted that embrace the suck part of the trail too. Yeah. And it was really cool. It was really awesome that at the end of the trail, I got to see another aspect of it where I really connected with a group of friends and we hung out all the time and had so much fun, to where it was no longer embrace the suck. It was enjoy the wilderness with some really good people.
Incredible. Well, while we're on the kind of embrace the suck, you know, and that's something that I wanted to talk to you about. Cause I we were sort of friends in high school and, you know, we kind of kept in touch. We a lot of mutual friends and stuff, but over the last few years, I know you kind of got a notice through like social media, you got a lot more into like the personal development stuff, lost a ton of weight. Like how did that all come about?
David Goggins.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, man. His first book, I read it. With my buddy Nick, we both kind of read it and dude, it lit a fire under my ass. Like I've never,
when was this?
Like I've never heard. That was probably, let's see, 2019, 2020 maybe. And dude, I just started like, I remember reading it that day and like I went outside, ran 5 miles farther than I probably ever run. I couldn't move for a couple days and I was just like, dude, I just freaking loved it. And that really lit a fire under me. And it's like, I've read the book on multiple occasions now, both
can't hurt
books.
Me.
So, yeah,
can't
bitch
hurt me.
Voice. Get that bitch voice out. Dude,
it's so funny. Like he's just another level, obviously. There's probably never gonna be another David Goggins, but something that everybody can aspire to for at least in short term, you know?
Sure.
And when you need to do things. So that really lit a fire under me. And I honestly fell in love with health and fitness. It changed my mental outlook on life. You know, it's just like I found something that I was really into. It made me just a happier person, a better person to be around. I felt way more confident. I felt just way better about everything. I'm like, man, this is something. And it's probably, you know, now that I'm unemployed, I had to quit my job to do all this. It's probably an industry that I'm looking to get into just to try and help other people find what I found in that, you know, and
first form.
Yeah.
That's what we were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. We were actually chatting about that. I think we know
quite a few people. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's something I definitely want to get into. And I think it's also an aspect where my previous job was retail management and I was in golf retail and, you know, I was hiring a lot of 18, 20, 22 area people who, I don't know how much you guys know about golf, but golf fanatics are obsessed with golf. Sure. It goes 0 to 100 real quick.
Oh, yeah.
And when I'm hiring these kids that are like, Ryan, I just want to make golf my career. Like, what do I want? What do I have to do? I'll do anything. Like, I want to work my ass off and how do I make this a job? And, you know, and I had these connections with these different vendors and I was able to just like tell them, you know, hey dude, work hard. And like all these sales reps are coming through the building all the time. Like show them that you know what you're doing, show them that you understand the product, show them that you're willing to learn and they'll hire you. You can move out to Arizona with Ping or you can go to California with Callaway. And seeing that through my last 6 years with the company of people constantly like fulfilling their dream of what and making them happy. It's like, dude, that was the most rewarding thing that I've ever been able to do. So I was like, okay, how do I find a career path where like I can have that feeling where it's like, I love it and I'm constantly seeing other people's success and just lighten up their life and, you know, just making them so happy. And I really just think the health and fitness industry would be somewhere where I could have that feeling way more often than, you know.
Sure.
And okay, you got the one of the best stories that you could possibly tell to embrace that and then enhance what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Motivational
speaking. Fuck. Yeah. You know? Shit. Yeah. Pumping me up to go fucking.
I know. It makes me want to go do it. I just.
Jacket pad along the Appalachian
Trail. We'll do a little podcast around the fire every night. All
right, well, we'll have a
third person carrying all the shit.
Murph.
Yeah, Murph, where you at?
You're getting a good taste of what it was really like out there. God, you know, it's not all sunshine and roses.
No, that would be, man.
Incredible.
Yeah, well, with kids, man. There's no way in hell I could be away from my kids for 6 months.
That's what we were talking about. He's like, you were at the beginning, you were like, you know, just I have nothing that was tying me to other than my job, you know, to you were able to kind of go do this,
you know, and and everything going on with my family. It's like, I knew I wanted to, you know, move back and, you know, spend some time with both my parents kind of recently retired. My sister's got two kids. I got two little nephews now. I freaking love them. I love spending time. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why am I in Milwaukee running a retail store? It's like, I could do that anywhere I want. You know, it's like, now you've got that thing
to do with your nephews too. Like that's a bond that you can build over this story. And then, teaching them along the way, like that's so cool.
Well, it doesn't have to be hiking the Appalachian Trail, but you fucking know how to camp probably better than most people. Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, we got them a little Fisher Price tent that they can set up in the living room, and it's funny FaceTiming with them and stuff. They couldn't really say Appalachian, so we just called it the Apple Trail. like Uncle Ryan's on the Apple Trail.
He's on the Apple Trail.
I'm like, where the fuck did we get apples?
Yeah.
What's that movie, The Ringer?
Yeah.
The fuck did we get ice cream?
Sure, apples would have been great on that trail.
Oh, yeah, man. Very perishable. Yeah. Eating quick.
Throw them right in the
carbs, sugar, everything you need right then and there.
Yeah, dude. Oh, man. So, one other thing I forgot to ask. So, showering. Did you shower all the whole time? Or are you just like...
You can bathe in the river a little bit if you find a little deeper pool. So, they do have hostels kind of spread out amongst these small towns, which, like, it's... These small towns are fantastic. Like, growing up in St. Louis, you know, I lived in Jacksonville, Florida, Orlando, Florida, Milwaukee. Like, I've always kind of been in big cities, and I've never really had a long-term time in a small town like that. And just seeing the love and care that these small towns have for you. Like, I got invited over I'd hitchhike with people, and they'd invite me to their house to shower and do laundry. Like, hey, yeah, you stink. Like, you want to come over and clean up? Like, you know? You know? And that happened on multiple occasions. I'll just, a good example, like, I was in a little town called Atkins, Virginia. Probably less than 1,000 people. I don't even know. And this lady had put her phone number up on the app. It's like, hey, yeah, if you guys need anything, I just love helping hikers or whatever. And I was waiting on a package that was going to the post office that Monday, and it was a Sunday morning. I was rolling into town, so I had to wait for the post office, so I just kind of had a day to kill. And so I texted her. I was like, hey, I don't really need anything. I'm just kind of wondering, is there anything to do in this town? Like, how do I spend a day? And she's like, well, I'll pick you up, and we can go to church. I'm like, All right. So I went to church with a little old lady. You know, she's probably 80 or 90 years old. And she brought me to the church, literally introduced me to 100 people. Like, and she bought me McDonald's breakfast, brought me to church, introduced me to 100 people. Great service. Brought me back, made me lunch, ate spaghetti for dinner, made me breakfast in the morning, drove me to the post office, drove me back to the trail. And like, and it was one of the deepest connections I've actually had with somebody. Wow. She was the nicest lady. Her husband had through hiked the AT in 1989 before they had apps and ways to track water sources, like really roughing it out there.
What the fuck did you do that?
Yeah. And,
maps.
So after he passed away, she was like, this is, was kind of her way of honoring his memory by just helping some hikers and stuff. And so I really dove deep into, you know, some life philosophy with her and what she's, you know, I love learning from older people that, you know, I think life experience is the best teacher. And, so we really had a genuine connection. I got to actually text her. I texted her a photo of me finishing and, I'm going to send her a picture framed and all that and get that to her. I know she really wants that, but it was just a good example of like just the community out there. It's like, I didn't ask for anything. I was looking for a recommendation of how to spend a day.
Yeah, what do I eat? What's a good restaurant? Uh-huh. Whatever it is.
Yeah. And she just let me into her home to shower, laundry, everything, dude. And that happened multiple times, you know, not always to that extent, but just when you throw your thumb out, it's like, you never know what that person's going to offer you or be willing to for you.
Yeah. So you were hitchhiking several times?
Yeah. So
I can picture it. So like you're on the trail and then like, I guess you get to like a point where you can like veer off and like there's a road.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So and literally the trail on one side of the road and then there's another white blaze just saying, hey, just go across the road.
And then you're like, look. And then I can look on my map and
Exactly. So and then you're kind of looking like, hey, maybe 7 miles down this road, there's a grocery store and I need some food. So it's like you don't want to walk 7 miles there, seven miles back. It's like that's an entire day. Yeah. So it's like hopefully it's not a dirt road and there's actually some traffic and you just wait for a car to pass, you throw your thumb out, dude. And a lot of these small towns, they're so familiar with like the culture of the AT. Sure. It's like 800 people live in this town and we get 3,000 hikers that stop by each year. It's like, it's a huge portion of their economy, even, you know, to where it's like you throw your thumb out and they see your backpack, they see your trekking poles. It's like, this guy's not a threat. I know what he's doing. He's probably trying to go buy some protein bars.
Right.
You know, you know, so it's like, I'm driving that direction anyway. There's one town around, like hop in, you know, and you really meet some really cool people that way. And, you know, and sometimes they offer their home. Sometimes they do that. But hitchhiking, before I started, I thought that was a really weird thing.
For sure.
Like, dude, that sounds like something I want to avoid.
That's serial stuff.
That's how you get murdered.
Hell yeah. The first couple of times you do it, it's like, okay, this is, and people are doing it every single day.
What is that? It's like, how do you know I'm not a serial killer? Oh, because the odds against two serial killers being in the same car.
Oh, good. Yeah. I never had a sketchy one or anything. I mean, bunch of just nice people. Right. There was a guy that had a huge ass knife like attached to his armrest, but I think that was for his protection. Like not to do anything. This guy, he was a Cubs fan, but I thought he was gonna use it on me when I told him I was a Birds fan. But yeah, that was the only time I really saw anything. That was kind of weird.
Wildlife wise, did you come across anything crazy? Oh. Wild, like any or like any crazy, like dangerous encounters, anything like that?
The fuzzy white caterpillars from hell. So this is probably recency bias, but I only saw them in Maine, man, but they tear you up. They're not poisonous, but their fibers just interact with the skin real weird or whatever, and they give you this big old rash and you're itchy for days. And it kept getting us, man. We kept getting got. And so my friend Miss Frizzle, she had one right there on her neck, like kind of on her chest, and just had this huge rash going on. And we're like, damn, okay, let's avoid those. And then the next day my other buddy had one on his arm, and I woke up in the middle of the night feeling like my pillow had needles in it. Now, really? I don't know what happened in the back of my head. Like, I don't know how a caterpillar got there, but it was like the same symptoms as like what they were doing. And it's like, man, dude, two or three days, it was the most pain. Like, itching. It felt like needles in the back of my head. Yeah. Oh. It was pretty bad. So luckily that was a one-time thing, you know. As far as dangerous other encounters, I mean, lots of bears. I'm sorry. I saw 15 to 20 bears, I'd say, total. Black bears, they're usually pretty scared of you. The one time you got to be a little cautious is when you're in like the national parks and they are very accustomed to people. So you would see some bears that weren't running away when you saw them. And it's like, that's when you got to be kind of on alert because they're especially Smoky Mountain National Park and Shenandoah National Park, the two parks you go to, they're so populated that like, they're not scared of people at all. It's like, no, you're a sign of
Sure. And you like know, if so, you have food too, they can smell it.
Mm-hmm. Usually you still make some noise and they'll run away, but sometimes not. Like one of my buddies, his name's Bear Claw, because he has a fat slash from a bear claw in his tent that he got in the middle of the night while he was in it. It's actually the most badass thing. I'm pretty jealous.
Yeah, you gotta keep that.
Yeah, even, like, even your name's Bear Claw.
Yeah, whenever that tent retires, you gotta frame that piece.
Oh man, it literally looks like Jurassic Park, like the logo of Jurassic Park with that big claw going across. I'm like, dude, I wish that happened to me.
Yeah, it's sick.
I got a buddy that I played pro ball with who got, the day he got drafted, was out surfing down in Galveston and got bit by a bull shark. So we called him Shark Bait. Okay. That was his nickname. Nice. His whole foot and leg were bitten up by this bull shark. Yeah. Okay. But that's crazy, man. Yeah, bear. Anything else?
Yeah, I never really had a dangerous bear encounter. I did see a lot of them, but they pretty much all ran away. One of the coolest encounters I had was in Shenandoah. I saw a mama bear with five cubs, and all five cubs were playing in the trees, just kind of running around. Dude, it's like a 50-pound dog that can climb a tree like a squirrel. And it's just like they're just going up and down, going crazy. And the mama was just on her back two legs, just looking black at bear. Me. Yeah. They're all black bears on the East Coast.
No grizzlies or anything like that.
It's all west. All west. So yeah, she's just up on her hind legs, like just staring at me. I tried making some noise and she kind of like tilted her head, like kind of made this little look like, you see all my babies like in these trees? Like, I'm not going anywhere. You're going out. I'm like,
get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Here, so I'm like, all right, I guess I'm carrying on.
Challenge me? Bring it on.
Yeah. So that was the bear encounters. As we got farther north, Pennsylvania had a lot of snakes, rattlers, and copperheads. Rattlesnakes, man. I don't know if you've ever heard a rattle on a rattlesnake. It's the most intimidating thing I can imagine. And they're just right there next to the trail. I probably saw three or four of them. Pretty scary.
I would say that's probably pretty more scary than a bear because you're not there. You can't see them. I mean, you can hear them, but
yeah,
those motherfuckers are fast and can come out of anywhere.
And there's so many things on the trail that you're walking that like it looks like a snake. Like there's roots, there's sticks, there's so many things. And you know, if you step on it, that's probably when it's going to bite. And it's just like, you're walking 20 miles a day. There's only so much attention you can put on each footstep. Sure. It's like, so that those were definitely scarier than anything. It's like, I did not want to come across a rattler, you know, and like, I kind of avoided hiking in the dark when I was in Pennsylvania and stuff. I was like, dude, I just don't want That's SOS immediately. It's like your hike's over. You're getting helicopter. Hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Hopefully in time. You know?
Right. Yeah. Did you carry any anti-venom or anything like that?
No.
No.
No, it wasn't worth the wait.
So there enough shit. Snake bite, fuck it.
Yeah, fuck it.
So
part of the story.
That was the snakes. Let's see, as we got farther north, really cool encounters with a moose in Maine.
Oh shit.
Those
things can fuck you up.
Those are fucking
It was a mama and two babies. So
those are things are fucking huge.
They're like 11 feet tall.
Oh, yeah.
They're bigger than a fucking horse.
It was preposterous. Dude,
they're like taller than a basketball.
Yeah,
they're like as tall as a basketball.
Fucking massive.
Preposterous size. I wish I saw a male with some antlers, but even mama, it was crazy. So we got to a campsite probably 7 p.m. right around sunset or so. And the next morning she was there 6 a.m. with two babies. Like we were watching sunrise with a moose and her two babies just drinking the water and kind of floating around in the water right there. It was just absolutely magical. She went away and we were actually taking a day off at that lake and she came back at 6 p.m. like right on the dot, did the exact same thing the next morning, 6 a.m. right on the dot. Yeah. So it's like basically by the end of that last encounter, I was like, I'm kind of bored watching the moose. I think I'm going to do something else. Yeah. I feel extremely so fortunate regular. For that. Yeah. 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 And that was the only moose. So I'm so glad that happened. Like, I mean, everyone kind of prays that they see a moose while they're out there, you know, hopefully from a safe distance, but a lot of people didn't, you know? Yeah. So I'm like, I got three encounters. Sure. It was the same moose, but whatever.
Yeah. Wow. I've seen videos of just like stomping,
I
can't remember what it was, but it just,
just fucking aggressive.
They're so big.
Yeah. She knew we were there. She didn't. And she look at us and just kind of keep doing what she was doing. And she was so close too. She was maybe 20 or 30 feet away.
About deer, see any big
lots of deer, lots of deer. Yeah, that was like every day in the south.
Or elk or
no elk, deers. Let's see,
any big deer like point wise?
No. Mainly females, honestly.
Really,
big bucks. And the national parks again, they're super friendly with people. You know, they're not scared. Yeah. Some of the other parts they would kind of run away more quickly. I guess while we're on animals, I gotta mention mosquitoes.
Oh yeah,
freaking hell.
Really?
Freaking hell.
Probably bigger than what we're used to here.
Yeah, there's some black flies and some stretches and really just the gnats and the mosquitoes just trying to get up in your eyelids, man. It's like when you're walking, you're just constantly swatting them away, and with one swat you're feeling six gnats on your hand, like just getting them away. Like that was very unenjoyable. We'll not lie, the like, I never really seriously considered quitting, but like 30 miles in was when I was like, it's like the first road crossing that like people quit like 30 okay. miles in, like, this sucks. Like, I'm, yeah, out. Yeah, I'm out. And I was sitting there camping on that. Like I ain't done, but I got to find a solution because this ain't going to work for 2000 miles.
So what'd you do?
Just loaded up bug spray. Honestly, I would wear my cap and I would just deck the brim of my hat with bug spray.
Okay.
And just wear it forward kind of low. And it really kept them out of
your eyes.
Out of your eyes, at least. You know, you're still getting bug bites every night. But at least that would help while you're walking, just having them away from you. You know, the second you sit down, coming back, but just keep it moving, outrun them a little bit.
Now, did you track your weight, like, from when you started to when you finished?
Yeah. So actually gained 8 pounds.
Really?
Oh,
muscle.
But
sure.
Dropped 2 pant sizes.
Oh, holy shit.
Yeah. So I started 175. I weighed myself probably 300 miles in. And I was down 15 pounds. I was down to 160. Wow. I'm like, okay, that's probably not healthy, especially if that continues. Right.
Yes.
So I was like, okay. So then I really just started eating as much as I could on trail, but especially when I would come to a town, just like eating an absolute disgusting. Like, it was awesome. That was my favorite part. Like, dude, I'm still trying to adjust to like not eating as much as I humanly possibly can.
Right.
You know, because like you're like, it's called they call it hiker hunger out there. It's just like you can't eat enough calories. Like, yeah. if I'm burning 6,000 a day, like I could probably get away with eating 10.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so I would down 2 14-inch pizzas and a freaking 1/2 gallon of ice cream and just like, and yeah. literally be hungry. Be like, hey, I should stop. I don't need to stop, but I should stop. Like, wow. it's like nothing I've ever experienced before. I'm like, this is insane.
Crazy.
This is insane.
Munchies from hell.
Oh my God, dude. So I was like,
I'm stoned a little bit sometimes too.
Yeah, dude, it's just piles on. I was like, I mean, it's still like, it affects your hiking. You're full, you know, it's like, you just feel like it, but it's like, man, if I could always eat like that, it would be a real joy.
Yeah.
So that's going to be an adjustment.
Sure. No, speaking of adjustments, you've only been back to fucking civilization for a couple days now. So yeah. Like, what's that adjustment been like?
Dude, like, life's complicated again. Like, and I'm not even like employed or anything and don't really have much going on. Like, I kind of can lay around all day. I've been kind of nursing a calf injury. Yeah, so I've just been hanging out. Yeah. It's like my body's like reacting. Like, what are we doing? Are we not walking anymore? What's going on here?
You're just,
you know,
sitting too much.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, I'm definitely slowly integrating back to society, I guess. I mean, like yesterday I laid around all day just cause my leg, and it was like, I didn't really have anything to do, but today just kind of driving over here and,
driving a car again.
Yeah. Weird. I went out to my storage unit to go just see what that looked like. I couldn't even remember. I'm like, oh, it's just boxes stacked to the ceiling. I'm like, okay, that's a project.
Yeah.
We'll do that tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll kick that down the road a little bit.
Yeah, kick that down the road. Exactly. But yeah, it's definitely just different, man. Like 5 months, that becomes your normal, you know, that's completely your normal. And now anything but that is the weird thing. You know, you go on a weekend backpacking trip or a week or two, it's like, okay, the backpacking is the weird thing. And then you go back into your normal. It's like, now it's just completely reversed where it's like, what do you mean? I'm not waking up and just walking. Like, it was so simple. The simplicity of life out there, I think I'm going to really miss, like, just simple things out here, just organizing, you know, my family coming up to see me in Maine when I finish. It's like, it's complicated. It's like, that was the most complicated thing I had done in 5 months. Just like,
coordinating where.
Yeah. Just coordinating like, hey, okay, your flight's coming into here and then you guys can drive to here and I'll meet you there. It's like, that's the most complicated thing I've done in 5 months. Like, for the most part, I wake up and just walk north and
eat,
find some water,
water,
some water. Yeah. And just other than that, just have fun. Yeah. Just chill. You know, it might be difficult, but it's not complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be the biggest adjustment for sure. It's just adjusting to life here. We'll see. I mean, I'm not gonna rush into anything. I'm probably gonna road trip the West a little bit.
Yeah, that was one thing I was gonna be asked. What's next? Yeah. You know, and obviously you said you're gonna, you know, got to find a new job and kind of figure out what you want to do with your life there. But like, as far as it, you know, adventures and stuff like this, what do you got next?
I figure I won't have much of a better opportunity than go see, you know, some of the West Coast. So I think I'll probably spend most of November driving around. Probably car camping is going to be the most luxurious thing I can imagine. Sleeping, actually having access to a cooler and some firewood sounds pretty nice.
Yeah.
I'll probably hop around Colorado for a bit, see Utah. I definitely want to go try and hike the entire Grand Canyon.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Could do that. And then I have never been to New Mexico, so hit some of the southern Rocky Mountains in New Mexico. Come back and, you know, kind of go from there, you know, and we'll see. Like I said, I want to hopefully get into the health and fitness industry a little bit. Just excited. something I really learned from the trail is, dude, I'm just like so excited to attack my next goal with the same intensity that I attack that. You know, it's just like by the end of it, Katahdin, you know, and reaching the end, it didn't become the end. It became the beginning of something great that I'm really looking forward to. And do I know the details of exactly what that looks like? Not exactly. But, you know, you go out there thinking you're going to have all these deep thoughts and you're going to figure out all the answers to life and know exactly what you want to do and do that. And it's not the case, you know, I don't know if I would want it to be that way.
It kind of would distract you from what's happening right then and there in front of you.
Exactly. You want to be in the moment, you know, it's a lot of alone time, you know, so you want some deep thoughts, and some days I'd think deeper than others. Other days I just thought about how much I didn't want to walk anymore. You know, it's just like, but you know, you learn that, like, you learn the perspective. I would say my outlook on life and everything is just completely flipped to where it's like, man, am I, whatever the challenge is that's coming up next, it's just like, there's not a single doubt in my mind that's like, it's going to be fantastic and we're going to do everything we can to make it work and we're going to get to our Katahdin, you know, it's just dealing with the monotonous. This trip was extremely monotonous. It was so many different challenges, and it's just like, there's really nothing you can't do, man. Just kind of stay focused and one foot the other.
You just answered. I was going to ask you, like, what was the biggest lesson or biggest thing that you learned from this trip?
Just the people and your outlook at life and just how glorious, like, just the people are. And just when you really dive into getting to know people and learning about their story, and everyone's got something to teach you. Everybody's your superior in some way, shape, or form, and you can learn something from them. And the more you're willing to dive into that, the more you're willing to learn and reflect on yourself and understand yourself as, you know, a not perfect being and be able to learn from other people. It's extremely rewarding and something I can't wait to carry with me the rest of my life.
Now, and I mean, does this make you want to, like you mentioned how complicated life has been in just the few days that you've been back and even towards the end of your trip, does it make you want to live a simpler life, like move out away from civilization and just kind of be out there on your own? Or is that something that you kind of picked up from that trip?
So I'd say that's something, you know, I've definitely gone back and forth with so many people. So there are three long trails in the U.S., the Appalachian Trail being probably the most popular. The Pacific Crest Trail goes from the Mexico-California border up to past Seattle, up to the Canadian border. That's like 2,600 miles. Yeah. And then there's also the Continental Divide Trail that goes from Glacier National Park in Montana at the Canadian border there down through Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, down to the Mexican. That's like 3,100. So a lot of people out there are like, ooh, I'm doing this one next and then this one. If you do all three, you're called a triple crowner. So that's something that's been floating around in my mind. It's like, man, and already, you know, just a couple of days back, I'm like,
what's the next one?
Because while I was out there, I'm like, you know, I think this is good. This is a lot of wear and tear on the body. I'm hurting every day. It's like, maybe I'll do some shorter ones or whatever. But now that I'm back, I'm like, okay, how can I make that work too? You know, but at the same time, it's like, you also, I don't know if I want to, you know, being 31 years old now, it's like, I don't know if I want, is that what I want my next 5 to 10 years to look like? Or do I want to go a different route to where it's kind of a pivotal decision, you know, and trying to make that work with a family and a career would be very difficult, you know? Yes. And, you know, it's just, it's some pivotal decisions I do have to make right now. And, you know, I got all the confidence in the world that I'll make the right one and, you know, we'll go from there. And if it results in shorter backpacking trips or whatever, it's just like, I just love being outside, man. It's okay if it's not 2,000 milers, you know.
Now, is this love of being outside just something from this trip, or have you always been had a love for being outside?
So I would say fall of 2021, I went on a camping trip with some buddies from high school, and we did Colorado, Utah, and then back to Denver, and it was like a 9-day, I think, and we kind of just had a different campsite each night, and I'm like, dude, this is the best vacation I've ever been on. Like, this beats going to a football game or whatever. It's like, this is way more cool. I'm like, and at that point, I was like, okay, I think this is probably more the area that my future vacations are going to look like, right? And then when my brother passed and I had all of his equipment, that's when I really kind of dove into, like, okay, what's this backpacking thing about? Like, you mean I don't have to go back to my car? I don't have to go back to my hotel or whatever? You know, it's like I can actually stay out there for, you know, stretches at a time. So it's like, then I started watching YouTube and you know, and then just started going to national parks. I really started national park hopping over the last 2 years and just, you know, flying to a city, renting a car, seeing four national parks, driving back to the airport or whatever, and just really, and I'm like, dude, I freaking love all this, man. So it's definitely going to be a big part of my life going forward. I love it.
How long did it take your brother to finish it?
Great question. Great question. Yeah, I'm not really sure. I know he kind of, so with the northern end closing in October, sometimes people kind of have to flip around if you're not going to make it on time and you still want to do it. So I know he got like to the New York area and then he kind of flipped up, went to Maine and started hiking south to try and finish those miles. So it was kind of, and then he flew out to Michigan to go on vacation with my family kind of there in the middle of the summer. And I think he flew into a different airport. So it was a big, yeah. I'm not exactly positive. I wish I could ask him, but yeah, you know, he got it done somehow.
Sure. No, this might be a stupid question. Do people only go one way?
Most people will go north. I would say 80 to 90% will go north. Mount Katahdin, the end in the north, is like this triumphant bastard. Sure. It's got the sign. It's got the 360-degree summit, and just everybody looks forward to that.
That's the one. Okay.
The southern terminus, Springer Mountain in Georgia, is a plaque on a rock. So it's a little bit in that aspect. Like, I thought it would be way cooler to finish in the north.
Oh, yeah, 100%. No, I was just not sure. I was like, yeah. People like, are you walking and people are just coming by? Or,
yeah. So walking south does have some advantages.
Weather, maybe?
Weather window. So the Baxter State Park up in the north, it opens in June. So you kind of, you do June, July, and you're pretty far north to where it's actually much more comfortable weather window. And then by the time you get down to the Virginia area, it's October and you're walking, you get to walk like 1,000 miles following the fall colors. Yeah. So it's like, dude, that sounds incredible. Cool. You know, I really only got, you know, maybe the last couple of weeks had some fall colors up in Maine, but for the most part, you don't really see that going north there. It's like almost your entire trip is just going, walking with them. You know, like the leaves are changing as you walk. So that's pretty rewarding. But yeah, most people, I would definitely say, go northbound. Some people like graduating college or something. If you graduate college in May, it might be too late to go north. But a lot of those people south, though. Right. Towards the end of the trail, you'll be passing just with some people southbound. It's definitely not popular.
Sure. That makes sense. I mean, you'd go that long. I want the end to be like a fucking, you know, finale.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
And the last 100 miles, the 100-mile wilderness is the kind of the pinnacle of like remoteness, I'd say. Like the entire state of Maine is really remote, but the last 100 miles, just you have. You're out there 100 miles until the next road. So good luck. Be careful. Dude, yeah.
It's amazing. This incredible story, Ryan. I mean, thank you so much for coming on here, man. This has been incredible. Is there anything else we forgot to cover?
Anything else you want to talk about?
Nah, I think we pretty much covered it all. I appreciate being here, guys. Thank you so much for having me. It actually, like I told you before recording, like, I don't know how to explain this trip. Like, so many things went on. Like, when someone asked me, how's your trip? Like, I don't know where to begin, man. No, it's like,
you can send them a link to this episode.
Exactly. Yeah, hopefully, here, what's your number? I'll text you.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this will be, you know, your video diary of that. So, but before we let you go, we always like to end our show with one last thing. It's called the Tombstone Game. Here lies Ryan. What's it saying on your tombstone?
Wow. People, just people, care about people, get to know people. That's why we're all here. And, you know, the more love and affection that you show for one another, life's hard. Life can be very hard sometimes. And the more of a network that you have around you of good people that care about you and that you care about them, it's makes it a lot easier. It's never going to be easy, but it's important to have people around you. And never feel like you're here alone. So people.
Dude,
great way.
Perfect.
Man.
Perfect.
And one last thing too. You know, we talk about mental health on this show. So people, if you know anybody that's struggling with stuff, talk to them, get them in contact with people that can help, because it is it's a terrible thing. And Ryan can attest to this and, you know, be there for, like you said, people, be there for them. Yeah. Thanks for coming on. Telling us your story. It was pretty incredible.
Yeah, incredible. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you guys.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. If you guys enjoyed the episode, make sure to hit that like button. If you're not already subscribed, hit that subscribe button for us, and we will see you next time.
That was fucking great, bro.
Yeah. Dude,
incredible.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Hello. That was fun.
Dude, that is fun. I can see why you.
Yeah, it was like, it's fun, like a...